The church in Corinth was Paul's problem child. It was located about 40 miles southwest of Athens, and the city of Corinth was a commercial hub in Paul's time. It had thriving business and arts communities, and there was tremendous religious diversity as a result of all the sailors and travelers who moved in and out of Corinth. There were Greek, Egyptian, and Roman religious shrines, as well as many Jewish worshipers. And as of about 50 CE, there was a Christian community there that came into existence. And the Corinthian church had a lot of problems. We know this because Paul spills it in the letter. It is full of his reprimands to the Corinthian church. There is the problem of pagan religious traditions that still find their way into the rookie Christian communities. And Paul works to sort this out in chapter 8. And then there's the problem of class divisions in the church. And Paul talks to them about this problem in chapter 11. Need a tissue. And then we get to chapter 12 and chapter 13. And chapter 14. For three entire chapters, Paul addresses this particular problem we're hearing about in chapter 12. He tries to work with these rookie Christians to get them to sort out their problem with spiritual gifts. It's really more a problem of diversity of gifts. Now, some of us would really like to have the problem of diversity in our churches, let me tell you. But the Corinthian Christians had this particular problem. They're experiencing a great diversity of spiritual gifts. But that diversity is becoming a way that they distinguish one from another. They've experienced great varieties of gifts of the Spirit. Wisdom, healing, prophecy, speaking in tongues. But these new Christians have construed these gifts to be signs of status and privilege in their church. So in the second half of chapter 12, Paul takes what was a very familiar metaphor in the Roman world, and he turns it on its head in order to prove his point to them, that there are varieties of gifts, but one Spirit and one body. Politicians and philosophers in Paul's day used this image a lot. The Roman Empire is like a body. The emperor is the head, and the body is made up of many parts, and everyone else is all those other parts, the hands and the feet, cleaning out the sewers, scooping up the poop in the streets behind the horses, and all that other fun work. So when the leader at the church in Corinth started reading these words from Paul's letter to the folks in the congregation, I imagine that a lot of them pretty much shut down and tuned out. Yeah. Yeah, we get it. We're like the body, many members, one body, someone up there is the head, and the rest of us are all the grunts, yada, yada, yada. Eyes glass over. But then they hear these words. On the contrary. On the contrary. These are really important words in Paul's letters. On the contrary. In Greek, I love it. In Greek, these words are megenoito. Megenoito, on the contrary. When Paul says on the contrary, it's kind of like when Jesus says, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, but I say to you, this is what Paul is doing here. On the contrary, when you hear those words, you know he's about to flip the script. On the contrary, some parts of the body that seem weakest and least important are actually the most necessary. On the contrary, God has put the body together such that extra honor and care are given to the parts that would seem to have less dignity. This makes for harmony. All the members care for one another. On the contrary. So this is different. This is not the same old body image that Paul's hearers are used to. This is not about an emperor or a king or someone with a lot of money being in charge of things and everyone else being the hands and feet doing the dirty work. On the contrary, this is the body of Christ. Now, in 21st century America, we live in a society that has voluntary church membership. Unlike the foot or the ear, we can and we do freely say, I choose not to be a member of the body of Christ. I choose not to participate in church because I can get a whole lot closer to God in nature. We often say, not today. It has been a rough and exhausting week, and we choose to stay at home. And I will let you know, I include myself among those numbers. Someone asked me once if I went to church when I was on vacation. And I was like, do you go in the office when you're on vacation? On the contrary. But try this one on. Imagine if parts of your body could choose and did, in fact, choose to not show up one day. I mean, let's just assume that our body could do what the average churchgoer does, and that is attend worship regularly, maybe 2 out of 4 Sundays of the month. So that's 50% of the time that members of the body of Christ are present. 50% of the time that parts of your body are present. So imagine, or actually I will say recall, what it's like when parts of your body don't show up. We all know what it's like when our gut doesn't show up, when we've eaten more of that spicy food than we should have, and we're paying the price the next day, or when we got that stomach bug that's going around and we need to stay within a real close jog of the bathroom. Have you ever had your back give out on you? Have you ever had your legs give out on you? Some of us have experienced much less lighthearted ways of parts of our body not showing up. We just don't realize how necessary a body part is until it doesn't show up. Now, my point here is not to get us all sad and discouraged about the ways our bodies do and do not work for us anymore. And I am not trying to guilt anyone about not showing up for church every week. Trust me, I get it. My point here, on the contrary, is to wake us up into recognizing that each and every one of us is missed when we don't show up. You are missed. Your presence and the gifts which the Spirit has poured out upon you are essential to the full functioning of this body and the greater body of Christ. And that goes for when you are present specifically here in this building on a Sunday morning, as well as beyond these walls, at any bodybuilding event. Sometimes there is a lot going on in our lives. Sometimes it's just a week, sometimes it's a month, sometimes it's for years that there is a lot going on in our lives and it's just too difficult to make it to worship or to serve the body of Christ because we are truly tired out. We are grieving. We might be experiencing depression. And we realize that we just wouldn't be much help anyway, even if we did show up. On the contrary, if one member suffers, we all suffer with you. Maybe you think your body doesn't have the gifts that could really be useful around here. Maybe you've experienced a pretty significant life change or a job change, and you're feeling a little awkward because your income doesn't let you give what you used to give. I don't have much worthwhile to give. On the contrary, members that may seem weaker are indispensable. We all have the same care for one another. And you know what else? When you are away down south during the wintertime, or away up north in the summer, don't you try to fool yourself by saying, oh, they really won't miss me. On the contrary, our body is diminished when you are away. And our egos are all a little bit envious too. Our egos are a little bit envious too. Our egos are a little bit envious too. All of us together are the body of Christ. When we are gathered in this building and when we depart from it, we remain the body of Christ, individual parts of it. We are always together the body of Christ, honoring one another, rejoicing with one another, grieving with one another, supporting and protecting one another. Paul insists that by the power of the Spirit in our baptism, we are members of one body. And I don't believe this is an outdated, old-fashioned notion, despite what church demographics and statistics are telling us. On the contrary, I believe the Spirit continues to blow in our midst, binding us together as indispensable members of this one body, calling us, challenging us to be together in ways that honor and support one another, and urging us to just show up.